You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm really bad at recording intros. This is probably the 12th take that I've done, and let's hope that this is the last one, because I've got other stuff to do than record this damn intro. I'm really excited to be bringing this episode to you. Ry Myers is an incredible conversation. His brain moves a mile a minute. So does the way that he speaks, so you gotta pay attention. Thank you to Broadway Podcast Network, as always. Alan, Dory, Patrick, you're such an incredible team. B, you're all fabulous. Thank you so much for having me and letting me be a part of the Broadway Podcast Network family. Please follow on social media at Dear Multi-Hyphenate. Or if you are really feeling in the giving spirit, please comment, rate, subscribe, do all that good stuff, you know, on Apple Podcasts. It really does help. I just wanted to give a shout out to Little Shop of Horrors off Broadway. I had such a fantastic time at that show. I mean, Conrad Rickamora, Tammy Blanchard, Tatiana Lofton, Christian Borle. Everyone was so fabulous. I had such a brilliant time. I highly recommend, if you want to see what I like to consider like time traveling theater, where you feel like you're watching the original production, go see Little Shop of Horrors. You won't regret it. It's a blast and a half. Also, I got engaged, so I'm just gonna leave that there. I got engaged to my partner Remy Germanario of 8 years, and I'm pretty excited about it. Anyway, let's go on with the episode. Ry Myers is a talk show host, producer, and your Broadway and entertainment BFF. He is the founder of Ry Entertainment LLC and RyTheNewsGuy.com, the latter of which he has run for over 6 years. Ry's infectious, energetic, and compassionate style to connect with people has landed him interviews with Oscar, Grammy, Emmy, and Tony Award winners and big names in the industry, including Nathan Lane, Billy Porter, Susan Stroman, George Takei, David Hyde Pierce, Laura Benanti, Matthew Broderick, and many others. Ry has produced and hosted numerous video interviews, behind-the-scenes segments, award show roundups, red carpet coverage, live events, and cabarets. Oy, I gotta take a breath. Ry also works with other creatives in helping them interview celebrities, produce their dream projects, discover their passions, build their networks, and more. He is also the host and executive producer of Live with Ry and Friends on Broadway, the popular free Broadway-themed variety talk show at Bar 9 on Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. I hope you enjoy this episode. Chat soon. Mwah. Hello, Ry Myers.
Hello, Michael Kushner.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just so dandy and so happy to be here to see your beautiful face.
I know. This is the second time you've been in my studio, which is great.
It has. And the first time was for the beautiful headshots you did, and now to do this interview. I just love coming to your studio.
You use those pictures.
I'm getting good use out of them.
You really are.
Well, they turned out just so freaking phenomenal. And I, as I said, I mean, every day I go through, so which other three should I send him to get redone? So before you know it, I'll have an edited list of like 25, and I guess I keep rotating them out because they all look so wonderful. They have so many purposes.
I love it. I think you were one of those clients that I love where you come with a preconceived idea and then I go, what if we did this instead? Or what if we shot this? And you go, yeah, let's do it. Let's try it out. And look at all the uses, you know, that you get to, because the way that I shoot is very from behind the table. It's very producer-y. It's very casting directory, because pictures need to solve problems.
Yes, and that's what I loved. And that was, I guess, one of the great things about the pictures that Ned needed was it wasn't specifically, you know, oh, that has to be for this role or that role. It was like, it was the producer-y, hosty, like behind the camera fun, you know, this is who I am shots. And they captured that beautifully.
Each, you know, if you're a producer and you're coming in to the studio, you get to break away from certain things that actors have to pay attention to.
Right.
So there's more of a freedom. But then actors have more of a freedom than the producer does. Exactly. Because with producers, you have to sort of maintain this professionality but this approachability about yourself in the photos, when actors can be more editorial or more character based. And you know, in a headshot for an actor, we need to see, do you belong in the world of Maisel? Do you belong in the world of Wicked? Do you belong in the world of Come From Away and Ozark and things like that? So but you did a great job. You were so, I think you were nervous, but you exploded in front of the lens, and you're great.
Well, I think everyone's nervous. I was nervous because I didn't know what to expect. It was my first time in front of the camera like that in 4 years since I gave up my modeling print days. And so it was just, me in my head was like, am I going to look good? I knew I looked fabulous, but in my head, I'm like, oh God, I can't believe I'm being photographed. I look terrible. And then you see the photos and you're like, I look damn good. Yeah, everyone's their own worst critic.
Of course. And retouching should never, ever be, you know, it should never be like where you train. I had one client call me that was like, I'd love to get on the phone with you about edits. And like, I do not like getting on the phone. One.
Yeah.
Two, I do not like getting on the phone, like in regards to like business.
Yes.
Anyway. So like, because that. I think anything can be handled with an email unless it is like a bigger thing.
Right.
But if you have a question about edits or you have a question about whatever, and your neuroses are just sort of getting in the way, take a breath. Can this be answered on an email?
Exactly.
So this was an older person. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get on the phone with him. And literally the question was, I don't think my eyes are edited and my under eyes are edited enough. And I'm looking at the pictures. I'm like, it is pristine. It is flawless. It is looking, basically they wanted me to take out the like under eyelid, and I was not doing that. Yeah. Like we're not making you look like a Barbie doll here.
Right. Like this is not Vogue or like, you know, some sort of like bang.
Even in Vogue, it's like I think he genuinely wanted a removal of like the lower eyelid, and I was like,
oh my God.
And I had to talk him off a ledge, being like, you're not going to look like a human being.
Right.
The first thing that people will see is like how edited this photo is, and that's not what you want in a photo.
No, and that's important because it's in when you look at edits. I mean, even with when I looked at my edits, I was like, oh, you know, the normal, you know, what are the normal edits? And it was like, oh yeah, please remove that, you know, little piece of hair that I had right here. Oh, I had to, you know, make it. But if you do it too much, then people do look at it and say, oh, that was really photoshopped or those are really edited. And I think no matter what industry, if people see that, it's kind of, I think, a little bit of a turn off. They're like, oh.
Oh my God. Really, like, it's all about representation, how we represent ourselves. Like if you walk into the room and you're not the person in the photo, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I trust them, because it's like a little deception thing. I do think artists, you know, and I think photographers are a little more affordable price-wise. These days, especially because there's a lot more photographers and digital and things like that, and a lot of upcoming photographers, I think that artists need to get photographed at least once a year. I know that that is an expensive thing. It can be an expensive thing, but I think artists need to get in front of a camera or have professional style photos at least once a year, because yeah, it's
everything's
just
changing.
Everything changes
and
so fast.
Constantly, right? I agree. I think you're right.
It's one of the reasons why I record so close to the release date of these episodes, because it's like so many things change in the industry. There's a new thing every day, especially post, you know, COVID.
Right, right.
That, like, you know, I like to have these conversations as close to the release date as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and look at it in a positive way. I mean, if you had your pictures done over COVID and maybe you weren't at the weight you wanted to be, but now you're, it's a year later and you're looking your best self, why not get more another pictures done?
Exactly. Or if you like discover something about yourself, like
exactly.
I discovered over COVID, like I put on COVID weight, but I like it. And like, I need to get photos of myself looking a little more like on the thicker side, because I feel more, I feel more grounded and I feel more of my age and I feel
those things.
So yes. It's like, even on the opposite side of the spectrum, it's like the self-discoveries that we've made, I think, whether or not it's physical or not, the self-discoveries that you make as a person have mm-hmm. to be represented in the photo. So mm-hmm. like, if you discover a new style, if you discover a new point of view, you have to have photos that match that point of view, because a photograph is a representation, a physical representation of who you are, of the type of artist that you are.
Yeah.
And they have jobs. They have to mm-hmm. complete, they solve problems. For actors, mm-hmm. they solve casting director and director and producers' problems. For producers, they get you into certain rooms for meetings, and mm-hmm. they solve issues. But so, speaking of producer and speaking of solving issues, you are a multi-hyphenate. You took my I think you're my first.
Second.
So I'm your
second group.
No. You're my first multi-hype student to come on my podcast.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So Rye took my class with Ashley Kate Adams and Kimberly Faye Greenberg, who are both guests on Dear Multi-Hyphenate. You took our class called Multi-Hype, and it's basically a multi-hyphenate boot camp.
Yes. It changed my life.
So how did it change your life? Tell us.
Yes.
Tell us.
So I have to say, in the brunt of us being locked down in July of 2020, I took this multi-hype course, and, you know, I knew Ashley Kate very well,
yeah.
and, you know, had known Michael and Kimberly a little bit, and I took this, and it changed my life because it made me realize everything that I had in my mind over these 4 or 5 months of what I wanted to do with my career, and even over in that sort of last year, how I wanted to proceed. It was all right. It was okay to think like, hey, I want to host and, you know, do my talk show hosting, but also produce. But you know what? I also enjoy sort of being behind the scenes too, and understanding that, you know, even though sometimes I tend to put the cart before the horse, having all of these ideas and being, as what I learned was a multi-hyphenate, is okay. And it's, you know, there is no rule book. And I think that was really big. And after I finished that course, I mean, it was 3 days, and it's about a 4 hour, I don't know, maybe it's changed since then, but it was about a 4 hour course each day. I left there and my mindset just changed. And not only did I get more inspired, I mean, it launched a whole hell of a lot of things for me, but it really made me look at things differently in this industry and realize that you can do it all. And, you know, if you put your mind to it, and as I said, you, Ashley Kate, and Kimberly are walking examples of that every
day.
Thank
you.
It's so true.
You were so great in that class, and like, I think the whole idea is just understanding, like, everyone, like people that listen to this podcast, people that I talk with in my workshops or wherever in the studio, this business is up to you.
Yeah.
There is no, there actually are no prerequisites.
No.
Like, there are college programs, but there are no prerequisites in this industry.
Exactly.
Which is really interesting, which
yeah.
is why all of a sudden, like, people that were on Wall Street for 20 years just join the industry
yes.
and have no artistic background, and it shows, you know, and it's like, oh boy, you don't. Okay.
Right.
And so there are no prerequisites. Any Joe Schmo can walk off the street and literally be like, I want to be a massive Broadway producer or a Broadway star
or a producer.
Actually, I just quoted the producers earlier. I was in a meeting and it was like, you know, what is the main lesson of the producers? You don't put your own money in the show.
Nope.
You don't do that.
No.
And I learned that. I've had my own experiences with that. Anyway,
yes.
So, but
it's
yeah,
a learning lesson.
It is. This whole industry is a learning opportunity, but
and it's very forgiving too, to an extent. I think, in the sense that, I want to say, in the sense of if you can, it's forgiving in the sense of, you know, you can, there's, if you make some mistake, a lot of these mistakes, if it's your first time, people understand, I think, for the most part, in the sense of, depending on what the mistake is, you know, I think it can be very forgiving if the, you know, the mistake you make is something that is, you didn't know or was a learning lesson. I think it can be forgiving in it to an extent.
That's interesting. I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I, it's not oftentimes that I get to disagree with my guests.
Yeah.
Because I like that.
No, of course, yeah.
Because in my experience, I think with certain, I think you are right to an extent. Absolutely. I think for projects that are, the stakes are lower.
Yeah.
I think for, like, if you're doing a new web series or you're doing an, you know, I have this idea, I want to do this, but yes, you can make mistakes, absolutely.
Right.
But when there's a lot at stake, I think, you know, mistakes in this industry can be millions of, look at Spider-Man.
Oh, well, yeah. Yes. Well, of course.
You know
what
I mean?
No. And I guess, yeah, I guess I should have rephrased because yes, you know, when it's stuff high stakes like that, no, of course not when you're dealing with millions of dollars. But I guess I meant more on the creative aspect of sort of, I don't want to say lower stuff, but when you're dealing with more of a, if you're experimenting or it's a new developmental thing or you're, you know. But yes, when it's something like so serious like that, I agree. It's, you do have, and you're dealing with other people and finances and time and everything in together. Yes, but you know, I think I more towards the beginning process of sort of, I guess, in that creative realm. But yeah, no, you're
I think.
Right.
But
million later with Spider-Man.
But I also think you bring up a really interesting point. I think the industry actually could benefit from more forgiveness.
Yes,
I think like
because we're all learning, and that was, and I think that's the heart and soul of it. I mean, I think there's a time if you know better and you'd still do it and you know, but if there's stuff that you truly, you know, didn't know, and I'm not talking about basic like, oh, I didn't mean to call him that name or I didn't mean to say it, but like things that like you did and, you know, you didn't work out or you didn't understand how that worked and, you know, maybe it caused some sort of, you know, impact, whether that caused the project to not do well or it caused, you know, the outcome you didn't expect, but, you know, this is your first time doing it, or this is, you know, is you're new to this. Like, I do feel that it can be, or at least I'm seeing, hopefully, yeah, that it can be a little bit forgiving and understanding that, you know, as long as that I think comes from a true intention of, you know, what you, you know, the mistakes you've made or the things that you've learned were not intentional or were not to harm anyone. You know, it was, you didn't know where to go or you didn't have the right resources, you know, then the next time you have maybe that hand to hold that, you know, so that mistake doesn't happen, but you're forgiven.
Of course. And you know, you might not ever work with those people again.
That's true.
And that's, you know, sort of the, I guess, the consequence of it. But it doesn't mean, like, you're not going to work again. Those people, you just might not work with them in that. You know, I worked on a film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bigger project, and there were a lot of mistakes that were made.
Oh yeah.
And there were a lot. And you know, I'm still working with those people because the mistakes that were made were informative.
Yes.
You know, they were not only informative, but they you know, fortunately we're at a place now where we can look back and go, oh my God, remember that, blah blah blah. Because we acknowledge them and we're moving forward.
Yes.
But there are some
collab. I think that's what I mean mostly is and because yes, that is, you know, I should preface that I'm not some, you know, everyone makes mistakes. I'm not vouching for people to make mistakes, but what you said is basically, you summed it up perfectly in that sense where, you know, mistakes happen, but you can learn from it and you,
yeah,
you know, it sounds like you still work with those people or you're still communicative.
Of course.
With those people.
Not everyone,
but you learn, but you say, oh God, remember that. But you know, you hopefully now took what happened and you know, now you're even better moving forward.
I think with mistakes though, and failure, you really learn who the other person is.
Yeah.
So that actually, sometimes failure and mistakes is actually like more informative to who your people are.
Yeah.
You know, because then you really see who you're working with and the real people and how they handle high stakes and how they handle drama and how they handle problem solving. Because if you're build, what did TLTNA say on one of my episodes? If you're building a plane while you're flying it, you know, the stakes are high.
Wow.
How do people guide you through those times? How do people, are they mean to you or are they grounded and go, we could, and they come up with five different solutions? Like,
exactly.
What is it?
I think it's
informative.
Yeah.
I think, and so it opens up to forgiveness, but you know, then it's really informative and going like, okay, I'm never working with that person again because I don't like how they treated me.
Yeah.
They crossed my boundaries and like, you know, it's, I think.
Yes. And I think if you can read that, if you know that going in, I would say if you're able to read your gut too, if that's something like you, if you take a meeting or a few times with a person and if you're in that position where you can either not necessarily back out of that project, but if you can be, if it's a way to not have, be involved, I think that that's, go with your gut too. If it's in the preliminary stages, if you're like, you know, I don't know how I feel, or this person doesn't make me maybe feel the best, or I'm not sure, you know, just anything. I think maybe, you know, if not everybody has that instinct, but if you do, I say, you know, go with it with, you know.
Yeah. So you are currently working on this show. And I think you're in a really cool position to talk about producing, especially in the early stages, because you had an idea and you started it and you're finding its footing. You're finding its place in the industry.
Yes.
And I think the biggest question that I get from a lot of people are how do you start?
Yes.
How do you start? And I think you, having experienced this, it's you have very specific answers.
I do.
So talk to me about what you're working on, why, which was a big question we did in my workshop, why you are doing this, and talk to us about how you're doing this too.
Yes. Oh, the good old why.
Oh, the
boy, do you have to dig deep for that.
But it changes all the time.
It does. Well, yes. So, you know, I'm known as your Broadway and entertainment BFF. And so this show that you reference is Live with Ryan Friends on Broadway. It's the new Broadway talk show in the heart of Hell's Kitchen. It's every Thursday night at Bar 9, which is 807 9th Avenue, between 53rd and 54th Street. If you know where 54 Below is, if you just head on down to 9th Avenue, you can't miss it. And I started the show because it was something that I had always sort of had in my mind in the fall of, one of the positive things of Multi-Hype was, you know, after I finished that in the fall of 2020, I launched Live with Rye, which was sort of a digital at-home series and, you know, quarantine and everything. But I wanted to get my name out there more as a producer and as a host, and wanted to be known more in the industry. And I have to say, to give a shout out to Frank DeLella, who I met with him over the summer, and we had a great chat. And sort of he pushed me and said, like, you know, why don't you do this? And after some ruminating and coming up with ideas and chatting with some people in my network of, you know, that I work with, I was thought, you know what? I came up with this idea. Live with Rye was already something that I had or thought was cool. And I thought, let me add with friends on Broadway, because it's a Broadway talk show. It's Broadway people, people in the industry, people off Broadway, if you're working towards Broadway. And so I pitched the idea to a few places, and Bar 9 picked it up. And it's been since September 23rd. And I really started it because I wanted something that was accessible to people. That's one of the things that I pride myself on with Live with Ryan Friends on Broadway, is that there's no cover charges, there's no minimums, and there's no reservations. And it's at 7:30 to 8:30 on Thursdays. And you can come out and just enjoy for that hour, whether it's somebody that you know and love in the industry that has numerous Broadway credits, or it's somebody like Michael Kushner, who is doing all of the amazing things behind the scenes and is known in the industry, and you can learn from that. Or if it's somebody who's up and coming that, you know, has just finished school or is sort of paving their way to Broadway, and how they're maneuvering their life. And maybe you're watching as an audience member and you're still in school, or you've just finished and you see that person on stage and you can really relate to that. And so it's a big community, and I really want people to be able to take away from that, that that they can see an up close and intimate portrait of the person they're seeing. There's live performances, if I have a performer on, there's, you know, interviews, and the best part is there's a trivia segment, which
it was fun.
It was a lot of fun, and, you know, I've stepped up the trivia game. I have to say, thankfully, I've been honored enough to get sponsors to come on the show, in the sense that, you know, in exchange for me collaborating with them and providing content, if they could provide the prizes for my trivia segment. And it was incredible. You know, last night's show was sponsored by Playbill. They gave out some exclusive fun Playbill merch. It's only available if you're like, go to the Playbill office and you're a celebrity. So that was pretty cool. And Come From Away reached out and gave me two pairs of tickets to give away to a show. Next week is The Play That Goes Wrong. And so I really, you know, in that producing, hosting world, I wanted to create something that was my own, and sort of I ran with it. And, you know, it's a learning game every day, every week, every hour.
So there's some great stuff that you have said, and I want to start with the beginning thing. You are your Broadway BFF.
Yeah.
How did you land on that? What does that mean to you? Mm-hmm. And how? And what does it say about the type of audience that you want to cultivate?
Well, I think I came up with that through a lot of self-exploration. You know, I have to say it was working with my creative coach, Brett Shuford, mm-hmm. who I've worked with for last year, has helped me on a one-on-one basis grow who I am as a brand personally. But I realized that I'm somebody that makes you feel good, that you hear what I have to say both from interview standpoint, news standpoint, review standpoint, and I give it to you as your BFF, as your best friend. It's fun. It's enjoyable. And in morphing that together, it became your Broadway and entertainment BFF, because everything you get from a best friend, that loving, that warmth, that mm-hmm. fun, that, you know, informative thing is what you get from me. I'm your best friend.
It's amazing.
You know, whether it's somebody that, you know, I've just met or I've known you for years, I am, and that morphed into, because Broadway and entertainment, but Broadway especially is my love of mine, that has morphed into your Broadway and entertainment BFF.
I love it. I think it's super accessible, and like it's, you know, it says exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
You know. So okay. So then, you know, you're talking about sponsorships, mm-hmm. and I think that's a huge thing that a lot of people don't know about. Like,
yes.
I get people don't know that grants exist. You know, and I think sponsorships is another thing. So talk to me about sponsorships. How has that helped you, and how does one get a sponsorship set up?
For sure. Well, yes, there's sponsorships and grants. I will say, for my show, with the sponsorships and partnerships I've been working with, they're different for each place. For mine, they're not monetary related. How I've set that up is, I say the internet is a beautiful thing. I reached out to companies that I thought, you know, for instance, I wanted shows to sponsor me, right? And I said, well, who works on, you know, X Broadway show, and what is the marketing or advertising person for this show? Is it, you know, Sereno Coin? Is it the Pico Group? Is it Situation? And then it was just an email, and I, you know, worked with people to get an email that was, you know, I tend to be a little bit long-winded, and so I worked with someone to get an email that was direct and, you know, less than three sentences, and that said, hey, listen, I do this talk show every week. It's growing. I have not only a big online base that watches, that tunes in from all over the world, but people that come out and see it. In making this more accessible, in celebrating Broadway being back, I do this trivia segment. Would you be open to providing prizes for maybe projects that you're working on that you want to get more eyes on, or that you would like? And, you know, and for some, it's been a great, I've heard from some, there's others, you know, I'm still waiting to hear back from, but I have to say, my biggest thing I would say is you just reach out and do it. I didn't know that this existed. At first I was scared to do it, because I thought, are they going to, you know, ask, do I need to like put money up front? Is this something that like, are they going to, and I didn't realize that if you have come into it with a collaboration mindset of how can I serve you and you serve me and make this a collaborative process, that people are willing and open to it. I think especially now in this post-lockdown world of things being coming back, and seeing especially the support that mm-hmm. the theater and Broadway and the arts needs, there's been a lot of openness to it. And so I've, you know, reached out and just have had meetings and a few Zoom meetings, and it's sort of snowballed. A lot of companies that have been like, we have stuff coming up or stuff that's in the works. Let me reach out to you in a few weeks when we get X set up mm-hmm. or this show set up. And I think maybe we could arrange a ticket voucher for mm-hmm. your show, or we could arrange maybe some merch for your show. And not only does it, I think, make the show more fun for people to come out, but it also helps that show. And each week it says, you know, that show, that my show Live with Ryan, Friends on Broadway, is sponsored by, you know, Playbill, by The Play That Goes Wrong, by, mm-hmm. you know, Broadway Plus. So in getting them, I say it's a reach out, but also understanding what you're asking for and being direct with it. And in that sense, as I said, to have that person that can edit you, so you're not sending a 5-paragraph email for mm-hmm. something that could be 3 sentences.
Of and course, you know, just like that answer.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding.
No, I know.
No, you know I like to sass you.
You do. I love it.
So I'm just kidding. So, you know, that's great. I mean, I think the lesson in all of this, I think the biggest thing about this industry is to always, always, always reach out.
Yes.
Like, I built my entire career on reaching out.
Yeah.
just being like, hey, can I do this? And then what are they going to do? Say no? Then you don't do it and you move on and you find another way to get in the, exactly. You know what I mean?
It's use all the doors that you can, the front, the back, the side. If you can't get in from the one.
You sound like me in college. And so, you know, it's funny because it's like, people will say no. This industry is, there is a lot of rejection in this industry. People say there's a lot of rejection. Like, you know, your Uncle Jack and your Aunt Bev, like, they're like, you sure you want to be in theater? There's a lot of rejection. It's like, they don't actually know what the rejection is. They just think they get, like, thank you so much, Michael. Well, don't call us, we'll call you.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what the rejection is. The rejection is being like, I would love to be in that room. How do I get in there? And whether or not that's a yes or a no. There's so many opportunities in this industry. Mm-hmm. So when there are so many opportunities in the industry, there is equal or greater the rejection.
Yes.
But just as there are so many opportunities in this industry, there's not many opportunities. There's so many opportunities in the industry for like for influencers and for creators, like with me alone, like I have my podcast and the Dressing Room Project and this and that. And there's a lot of different ways that I can get into different rooms.
Exactly.
But for someone that just identifies as an actor or one proficiency, the opportunities aren't as great usually. And it's so funny. It's like, I was just thinking, it's like my friend booked a Broadway show, but he's a certain track where he was hired just for COVID to stand by, basically, and is like, we'll call you. But that is, like, he is waiting to make his Broadway debut. It is one person. He is between him and a Broadway debut. One. Right. One person. That's wild.
It is.
There's, wow. That's, that. There, it's not 5-6 opportunities. It's not 10. It's one person that is standing behind him in that Broadway debut. Mm-hmm. And that's what many of us are up against, unless you multi-hyphenate and you create these opportunities and you, you know, knock down doors and all those things.
Which is what you have to, I think, have to do now in today's era. Is there's, I don't, not that there isn't room to have one proficiency. There is. And if you can do it very well. But I think being a multi-hyphen, having multiple proficiencies is, I think, the only way to get, you know, more in the door. Because once one thing happens, as you've seen as a multi-hyphen, then after that, the doors just roll open. And, you know.
It's so true. We're going to take a break. And as soon as we are back from hearing from our sponsors, we're going to continue this conversation.
Sounds good.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And we're back.
Hello.
Hello. So
great to see you again. Nice little break.
Yes, nice little pee break. Just kidding. We literally looked at each other's eyes for maybe 0.7 seconds and then continued to talk again. But that's the magic of editing.
Yes, love it.
Speaking of getting into rooms, I got this really crazy cool email that I was like, okay. I got an email from the creative team of Paradise Square. Which is coming out on Broadway.
Yes, I can't
wait. At the Barrymore. And they basically were like, do you want to come watch a rehearsal? And I was like, yeah, 100%. And then because I like creating opportunities, I was like, can I bring my camera and photograph, snap pictures? Like,
wow, yeah.
Could this be a photo opportunity? And they were like, yes, and got it approved and everything. And I was in the room, and I got to watch. I was only there for 30 minutes because I was in between clients, and I really tried to make it happen. But I was only there for 30 minutes. I got to watch 30 minutes of their first run-through, which was really cool. And when they started, they were like, all right, everyone, we're back. We're going to do this run-through. We have Michael Kushner in the room today. And I was just like, there's no reason why you need to introduce me. But at the same time, I was like, I can't believe this. Like, it was like a really emotional experience. Like, I was genuinely like,
wow.
I was like, yeah, hi, everyone. Like, and I was the only person there. They basically, like, sat me next to the executive producer and, like, were like, have fun, enjoy watching, and, like, feel free to take pictures. And it was, like, so cool. And, like, so I felt so a part of the magic. Not to mention, the show is going to be so good. The opening number was amazing. I literally was riveted, and it's a really cool story about the 5 points during the Civil War. And I can't wait to, because I'm also going to go to the final dress, I cannot wait to see it. The music is incredible. The staging was amazing. What I saw of the performances are just already spellbinding, and it was just amazing to be in that room, and I can't wait to see it when it's at the Barrymore in a few weeks.
I can't either. That's great to hear, because I'm seeing it on the 18th.
Yeah, fierce.
So I cannot wait, and I've heard this, a lot of that same stuff, but even more hearing that from you makes me even more excited to see it. I think it's going to be it's one of those that people aren't not expecting to be a hit, but I think are going to be. It's going to make that's making that ripple now, and I think that big wave is going to come, and it's really going to.
I think what's interesting is with like original musicals, right? Mm-hmm. Like a music original things have a harder time getting sort of traction, I feel, because we don't have anything to base it off of.
Right.
When a revival or an adaptation comes, everyone's already talking about it because we know the movie.
Yes.
We know the books.
Yes.
We know the this. So we can't wait. Oh my God, how are they going to do this? How are they going to do that? How are they going to do that? With an original musical, we're sort of like, all right, I guess we'll see it when we see it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard, but you know, that experience of being invited to this space, but also like bringing my camera, is the type of work that you do as well, is walking into a space and figuring out how to use the whole animal, right?
Yes.
How are you, like, you know, I don't eat red meat or pork, and I don't condone hunting, but like when, you know, an animal is used for meat or whatever, I think the only way to justify it at all is when every ounce of the animal is used. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
It's like when everything is used for something specific and has purpose.
Yeah. And I think that's the only way to do it.
Of course.
About it, I think, you know?
Of course. But I think like that is the industry too.
It is.
It's what, when you walk into a room, how much of it are you going to use?
Yes.
Like, that room is your canvas.
Mm-hmm.
How can you get involved? You know?
Yeah.
And that is our industry.
It is. And I do think that we – and on that, I do think that we also – I think, stress – because I do this, and I've struggled with it. We stress ourselves out too often. We're afraid to go in that room, or we're afraid to send that email to get into that room because we you know, it's our psychosis. I mean, it's in – we're like – I mean, I still do it to this day, and you know, when you come to that understanding of, if I just send this email, who knows what happens? And you send that email, and all of a sudden, Michael Kushner's sitting in the theater with his camera, and you know, like I'm saying, like what led to it, you know, you all of a sudden an email sent, and here you are, and then look, you Michael Kushner sitting in the theater to watch a rehearsal of Paradise Square, and you're being introduced, and you're sitting next to the executive producer, like, and you know, you don't know, and when that happens, I think no matter what door you're trying to get into. And what you see happens from that, you realize, wow, I think the next time around when you want to send that email again, or you want to reach out to this person, or you want to make yourself known, I think, gives you that little bit of a push to do so. Because, like, look what happened last time. I got to meet this person, or I got to have a coffee with this person, and, you know, let's just keep doing it. And if they, you know, if the person says no or the place says no, okay, on to the next, you know?
It's true. And, you know, you, and that way you build the relationships and mm-hmm. you build the trust. And when you, mm-hmm. you know, when you start producing, like, projects,
right,
or you have these opportunities, now you can just email or text these people and be like, hey, do you want to do this with me? And because they trust you and because they believe in you, they're going to probably say yes.
Yeah.
You know? So this industry is about longevity. It's 90% relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want it to sound gatekeeper-y, because I actually can't stand the gatekeeper aspect of this industry, which there is a...
Oh, big time.
Large gatekeeper aspect in this industry.
And I have to agree with you 100%. It's, yeah.
It's even like when, you know, when I first started using the word multi-hyphenate, mm-hmm. I mean, even when I started Michael Kushner Photography, people were like, oh, you're a photographer now?
Yeah.
Like gatekeeping my own experiences, basically telling me, like, you can't do that because I don't approve of it.
Exactly.
And then it went from like, oh, like, how's Michael Kushner Photography going, to mm-hmm. how's Michael Kushner Photography going? It's like, you're photographing some really cool people and your work is great. Yeah. It takes a second, and it takes real intention and guts.
It does.
Kishkes to
yeah.
start something new.
Yeah.
When you started Live with Ryan Friends. Yes, yep. Live with Ryan Friends.
On Broadway, yeah.
When you started Live with Ryan Friends, what were some of the demons that you were working through? Like, what did you... Was there anyone saying to you, like, in your own mind, or even a person saying to you that you can't do this, or you shouldn't do this, or this is going to fail? Or
I think the most person that was saying it was in my mind, and right. I think, I mean, that's what we're sending me. Yeah, it was a lot of, you know, you can't do this. Who are you to do this, right? You're not anyone, right? Okay, you have a website, and yeah, you've interviewed mm-hmm. these people, but, like, who are you to go to these, like, bars and pitch this show? And, you know, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, well, what if this fails? Or, you know, if they say yes, this place says yes, and, you know, I always, like, what if tonight is the night that no one shows up, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody comes, and, you know, and the bar's gonna, you know, and you do internalize it a lot. I mean, thankfully, I sort of kept it on the DL from a lot of people that were not in my immediate circle, because I'm somebody that, like, until it's sort of finalized, I don't like to talk too much about things, just because I feel like sometimes it's bad juju if you say something too soon and then it falls through, and then it's like, oh, hey, oh, yeah, that's not happening.
Right, of course.
I think the biggest thing for me was my internal voice of, like, okay, you know, this person said you could do this, you know, you had this great coffee and meeting with Frank, and he's like, yeah, go for it. But it's like, you know, in establishing a name for myself, I'm like, but I'm no one. Like, I'm at the time, you know, I'm, you know, what am I? Like, I'm going to just do this show, and, you know, people are going to expect to come. And I know some, you know, people in the industry, but I don't know enough. And, you know, they're gonna probably think I'm a fraud, or they're going to think I'm, you know, you're going to do a show. Oh, haha. You know, that's like, dismiss it. And it's like, until you actually, it ends up happening, until I stepped on that stage that mm-hmm. first night and saw that people came and saw that, you know, this happened, it was like, okay, wow, you know, this was internally, and this was the voices internally telling you that. And I think the voices were a mixture of things that have happened over my years of your lifetime. I think it's a combination of things that I've heard from people, but mm-hmm. you know, that I took and that, you know, said. And then once it happened, it was like, wow, you know, I can do this. And mm-hmm. and every day it's a, you know, it's sort of that same process. You know, in reaching out to a specific person in the industry or a specific place, it's like, are they going to think that this is, you know, what if they don't think this is legit? Or what if they're just like, oh yeah, you're like talk show, or like, you know, and, you know, I don't know that person very well to just like approach them after their show, or to, you know, reach out to them on DMs. And what if they think I'm, you know, and so there's still that stuff that goes into it. But as I said, once you're doing it and you get into that and you see the things that it becomes, for instance, even now with me seeing that now these sponsorships are coming about and collaborations, it's like, wow, you know, mm-hmm. I had that in me all along. And that stupid, you know, head, that stupid voice in my head that was telling me that, you know, you couldn't, and that negative thoughts, you know, almost held me back.
I think as producers that frequent the cabaret concert bar scene, mm-hmm. you know, that have done those types of shows in those settings, I think what was so weird is when I would see a smaller house, I would feel apologetic about it, being like, I'm so sorry we didn't, you know, that there's not. But chances are the people that have already performed, the people that are performing that show have done a smaller crowd.
Oh,
yes. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's like, it's so it's not as embarrassing. It's just, especially the people that do frequent the scenes, like, you know, I was just speaking with, I just had dinner with Paige Turner last night, and who's a dear friend of me and Remy's, and Matt, her partner, and we were talking about, like, performing for small crowds and stuff like that, and Paige is a drag queen, and has been a drag queen for quite a few years, and so she's had massive, sold-out, crazy audiences, and then, like, five people. And they've seen it all. There are people that have seen it all shapes and sizes of audiences.
Oh, yes.
And that is just the world that we're in.
It is.
Just because five people sit in your audience one night doesn't mean you're a failure.
No. But it means you give that best damn show to those five
it's
people
true.
Because those five people are have come to see this or have come, and whether they're new or returning, they're going to get the best damn show of their life. And, you know, whether it's in drag or it's, you know, another show of sorts. And I think that that's. And you make such a good point, because there is a lot of times, you know, there have been times, especially recently in the last few weeks with the Omicron spike, and people were a little bit more hesitant to come out, and, you know, so attendance would dip, and I would feel apologetic mm-hmm. to my guests, you know, that would come, and there wouldn't be a lot of people, and I, in my head, you sort of get that negativity again of, like, they're going to think that this is, like, nobody came, like, what is
right.
going on, you know, and you forget that, you know, they're used to that, or it's not something, or, like, they're not thinking that, and, like, they're just here to have a good time. I mean, everyone says to me, you know, there's been a few people I've apologized to, and they're like, are you kidding me? I had a great time. This was awesome. Thank you for doing this. Like, what? And I'm like, okay. You know, and you're like, wait a second. This was, you know, but I think to just real quick to piggyback on what we were talking about gatekeeping earlier, I think that that also goes into that mindset of you can't do things, because mm-hmm. in thinking even about that, you know, we get hard on ourselves. There's times where I'm like, you know, I do a show and maybe the turnout isn't good, or the online turnout isn't good. And you we're seeing today, and I think it's getting better, but in the industry, you know, to get, I feel, to a certain level, whether of success or what you classify success, a lot of these gatekeepers do say, well, what's your audience? What you're this? And, you know, you may have a raging audience sometimes, and then sometimes you don't, but because you don't have 60,000 followers, mm-hmm. you know, they may be like, well, we're not really interested. Compared to somebody who maybe does have 60,000 followers, but maybe doesn't do what you do, but mm-hmm. they're going based off. So I think it's sort of all intertwining, you know.
It is, but it's all for the memoir, because it's showbiz.
Yes, it is all for the memoir, and also all for, you know, as I want to just plug too, I also help and coach creatives with a lot of this too. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people that come to me and ask, you know, how have I done all this? How can I help? Sort of, how can I build, whether it's my own website or reach out to this, not only just as a, if you're a host or something, but in any industry. And so, you know, if somebody does want to learn more, I'm always happy to work one-on-one with them. I'm working with quite a few people right now, because to me, I want to be able to always give back to.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
to me, it's very simple. It's like, it's, you have an idea and you just go for it. You just mm-hmm. ask. One of my favorite stories is the story of when I got, I stood on my first Broadway show. It was the first time my first Broadway stage. It was the first time I got backstage and ended up on the stage standing there uh-huh. looking up at the audience. It was 2006, Wedding Singer at the Al Hirschfeld. I had been in New York City doing, like, one of my summer trips. I was a Florida boy. And I was in an American Eagle shirt and, like, American Eagle plaid shorts and Crocs, maybe.
Love it.
And, like, because I'm a mess. And I had gotten student rush for Wedding Singer back when it was, like, $20, $25.
Wow.
And I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm going to, you know, what's up? And so I knocked on. I was like, I wonder if I can get backstage. I knocked on the stage door of the Al Hirschfeld.
Uh-huh.
And this big, tall guy comes out and goes, yeah. And I was like, hi, I'm an out-of-town theater student from Florida, and I wanted to know if I can get backstage at the Al Hirschfeld. And he literally was like, okay, and took me backstage and just, like, showed me around the Al Hirschfeld and then brought me on stage. And he was like, you have a camera. Do you want a photo? And I just, like, stood on Zero on the set of Wedding Singer like this, just, like, with my arms out. And that picture hangs in my dad's house in Florida. But that was the first time. And literally the lesson there is ask for what you want. Yeah. I wanted to see backstage. The guy let me in, and I got to experience the magic of a Broadway show.
I have goosebumps from that. Oh, my gosh.
And then I did it again at the O'Neill ones at Sweeney, because Sweeney was on Broadway at the same time. And I left with a signed cast poster and Michael Servers' his guitar pick. Like,
oh, my God.
I know, because I was just like, I just want to see backstage. And people literally, and because I'm friends with Lauren Molina, and right. She's a guest on Dear Multi-Hyphenate, I told her, I was like, who was the woman that showed me backstage? And I described her. And because I remember when the door person brought me backstage, there was a dresser that was walking by with a basket. Mm-hmm. And the door person goes, can you show Michael around? And she dropped the basket and was like, absolutely. And just like brought me around. And years later, I was like, who was that? She had long whitish gray hair. She was a dresser. And she goes, her name was Patty. And I was like, well, thank God for Patty, because she literally gave me Michael Servers his guitar pick.
That's amazing. I guess you don't realize in today's world, and I say today's world even as far back as 3-4 years ago, where like I can't imagine something like that happening.
I know.
In these sort of last 3-4 years, where, you know, going, that's why it got me goosebumps when you said that, because can you imagine knocking on a door today, you know, even pre-COVID, and knocking on a stage door saying, I'm going to, you know, that might be like, get out of here, kid. Like, yeah. What? Like, you can't, you know, because they're so I think that is special. But you said you asked, and look at that. I mean, you got that opportunity. And
I think it's also because Broadway is a lot more accessible for the fan now.
Yes, it is.
You know what I mean? Like, it's still very expensive. I'm not talking about accessible financially.
No, right.
But for the fan, I mean, Broadway is all over TikTok. Broadway is all over Instagram. Broadway is all over social media. Playbill and Broadway World and these news sources, they produce so much content to bring Broadway into the palm of your hand.
Right.
Which is great. And I mean, Broadway Podcast Network, mm-hmm. you know, look at the podcast on that, and with Live with Ryan, like all of these different shows and that you can get for free, you know, that you can listen to for free is astounding and amazing. We did not have that back then. I was on a Wicked fan board. Mm-hmm. I was I Fly with Elfie. And that was how we got Broadway from other states. And like, as a gay guy, as a gay kid, I was like loving the pictures of Broadway bears. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like, I was like,
oh my God,
Broadway bears. Of course. Well, yes, of course. And then I got to photograph one year, which was really cool.
God.
But never again. Yes. That night is so intense.
I bet.
It's a really cool night, though. Like, it's like you and – because it's Broadway Cares. It's you're donating your time.
Right.
So it's you and, like, seven other photographers. When I did it, it was, like, Billy B and Evan Zimmerman and – I can't remember who else was there, but we all, and it was at the Manhattan Ballroom, I think, that year.
Yes.
And we all were stationed in different places in the space, and literally, like, what you have to do, it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
You're shooting both shows, and you have to get the edits to them basically as soon as you get home. So I'm uploading like thousands of frames and then going through all of them and editing them.
Wow.
And I think like really editing them, like mm-hmm. not just like a general brightness, like really editing them. And like, I think I went to bed at 5 a.m. that morning.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, it was a crazy, crazy night, but exhilarating and cool because the show is amazing. And
what,
like
they end
concert.
Up only using like one photo? Like,
yeah, they basically – because it's seven photographers right. at once, they basically wind up using like three or four from each photographer.
Oh, yeah.
So wow. You're just like, cool, 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 nice, nailing it. But it was an amazing experience, and I have some really great images.
I mean, that's incredible. That's really awesome.
It was a cool time.
It is, and that's – how you do it. I mean,
but because of these, you know, the Broadway is so accessible now.
Yes.
And I don't think those moments will happen where someone's knocking on a door, because BroadwayCon exists.
Exactly.
Because accessibility does exist. Yes. People can, and hopefully the actors establish the boundaries and the fans respect the boundaries. Exactly. Which I know it's of many stories yes. where that hasn't happened.
Oh, yeah.
I think those moments where, you know, I got in backstage yeah. because I asked. I don't know how much that exists anymore just because Broadway is so accessible nowadays.
And it is so accessible. And that's also one of the reasons why I created this show. And if you know, look at my show. I mean, you could come and see your favorite person mm-hmm. and be able afterwards to meet them. Or you may not even be in New York City, but like, oh my right. gosh, I got to see, and I'm like making this up, but like, I hope she does come on the show, like, oh my God, I got to see Eden Espinosa perform mm-hmm. like a song from her album that she's never done, and I'm watching her, oh my gosh, I've never seen her this close before, and you know, then maybe, you know, you shoot her a message after, and you're like, hey, I saw, like, and it's just this like, oh my God, she wrote back to me, or, you know, you go to the show and you see someone you like, or hey, I've been following you, and there's that connection that happens, and accessibility, I think, is huge. And it's very important. And, you know, I've had my own experiences, too, where trying to experience Broadway. And I mm-hmm. think you're right. We're in a stage now where accessibility is huge. And there's so many different variations to it, you know, TikTok and online and everything, that being able to that, I think, is what the fan really looks at the most, is they want to feel loved and accessible, mm-hmm. be able to have that be accessible. And, yeah, sometimes it's expensive. But when you can be that accessible and go to, let's say, that Broadway con or stuff, accessibility matters, and for me, that's why I did this show, because I want to have people to be able to have that fan experience, but to be able to say, like, oh my gosh, you know, I got to experience this, and, you know, it's all about accessibility. I agree.
Rye, you're amazing.
Thank you.
Where can we find you on social media, and what's coming up in your life that we need to see and be a part of?
Yes. Well, you can keep up with me. You can, of course, go to my general website, www.ryethenewsguy.com. That's Rye with an E, like Liza with a Z, as I like to cleverly say. And I'm on social media at Rye_Myers. That's Rye_Myers on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm very active on Instagram, on TikTok. And, you know, I always respond, so please reach out, and you can subscribe to me on YouTube. As far as what's coming up, I've got a lot in the works. Mark your calendars every Thursday night at 7:30 if you are around. The beautiful thing is it doesn't have to be right at 7:30. You can come between 7:30 and 8:30, but come to Live with Ryan Friends on Broadway these next few weeks. You know, I have Danny Quadrino from Wicked and Newsies yes. and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory on coming up on March 10th, and Mia Pinero on March 24th. Next week is a fan appreciation week, so I'm honoring some fans who come to the show every week. And next week is sponsored by The Play That Goes Wrong. Mm-hmm. So keep up with me with that. Also, the show that I produced this summer, it was a song cycle called The Parts I Keep Inside. Now a full book musical is going to this next steps, written by Jeffrey Schmelken, and I'm lead producing. And there's so many good things that I, you know, can't say too much, but that it's going to the next step, and we are, you know, the eventual aiming for an off-Broadway run in hopefully the near future, but lots happening, so please keep up with me, and I always love hearing from people both old and new, and people I haven't heard from, and I want to be able to help you any way I can. So, you know, please do not hesitate to reach out to me.
Thanks so much, Rye. You're amazing.
Thank you, Michael, for having me. It means the world, and you are just as amazing, and then some.
Now get home safe.
Thank you, my dear. Now leave my studio, please. Get out of here.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.